Welcome to the House of Pod, a show where we pull back the curtain on the world of medicine, we answer questions about your health, and we interview great guests.
I'm Joe, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaveh.
And we're two gastroenterologists.
What's a gastroenterologist?
You know, the doctors who work with your digestive system.
Say what?
You know, your liver, your pancreas, your intestines.
Where now?
Your butt, Joe. It's your butt.
Oh.
On today's show, we have Raif Darazi. He is an HIV advocate, a bodybuilder, and he has a very popular YouTube channel. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Joe.
Guys, so here's the deal. This is our Thanksgiving episode. And I want to do something a little different. I want to talk about what we're grateful for. So what I would like to do is go around the podcast, the table, so to speak, and hear what you're grateful for. It could be one thing. It could be 10 things.
Okay.
So I have Lizzie and Joe with me. Lizzie, how are you?
I'm doing good, Kaveh.
Joe, how are you?
She doesn't want to go first. I could tell in your voice.
Yeah.
No. I'm thinking about gratitude and Thanksgiving and all the things I'm grateful for, and it's hard to limit it. That's the only issue I have. It's hard to limit how many things I'm grateful for.
I hear that. That's a good attitude. I think this is going to tie in also to our great guest coming in a little bit. But first, Joe, can I start with you? Can you tell me?
I'm sorry. You were just projecting. You didn't want to go first.
Joe, what are you grateful for, man?
So many things, like Lizzie said, but I'm going to just keep it to one for the show. Just my lady friend, Yen. She's a really, really nice person who I met a couple of years back, and we've been dating just recently. And I'm very happy to have her in my life, and my family loves her. And I know it sounds totally cheesy, but that's the truth.
No, man. I think it's great. Why are you worried about being cheesy? I've known you for like 20 years? How long have we known each other, Joe?
More than that, man. Since 13?
Boy, that's a long time. Oh, my God.
30 years almost.
So 30 years or whatever.
Almost.
I've only heard you maybe talk about one other person that way. It was like your first crush,
right,
in like high school. And I have not heard you talk about anything else like that. So that's... it's really cool that you have something that you care like that much about again.
Yeah.
As long as you don't get hair plugs. It's an amazing, wonderful, heartwarming, very cheesy, but totally adorable thing that you're saying. But don't get... it's all ruined if you get hair plugs.
I have to say something about that. It's so funny you brought that up because we negotiated... not really.
Wait,
we never got an argument about
real
that.
Real quick. Let's explain to the listeners. I think we talked about this in a previous episode that you're Amor had recommended that you get hair plugs.
Yes.
And Lizzie and I were against it. So that's where this is coming from right now.
Well, I was trying to explain. My idea was maybe she was saying go big or go home. Like shave it all off or plug it up, dude. Like, because you're rocking this in-between stage. And you said she was mostly joking.
But at the end of the day, I decided I'm going to go on Propecia. And that way I'll at least keep what I got. So okay. I probably won't grow anything. They all say they grow stuff. They don't grow anything.
We'll do a before and after photo.
We'll do a before and after. Hell yeah. So it's funny you bring that up. Yeah, that's kind of the negotiation middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
No hair plugs, but we'll go on Propecia.
That's love.
You'll
do Propecia. I don't have to cut that. It's kind of embarrassing going on Propecia.
No. People go on Propecia all the time.
All the time. I mean, honestly, this is the thing that we do.
Disappointing my bald brothers, though, you know?
Well, you're not totally bald. You're sort of on your way to it, but you're not a bald brother yet.
I know, but still.
No, man, you be you. Do whatever works for you.
And this is what we're doing on the show, is talking about, you know, mostly our guests, but now Joe, things that like we want the public to be more comfortable talking about. So if you're going to do it, let's talk about it, Joe.
I just did.
All right. Very good.
Your turn.
We appreciate it.
Lizzie.
I am thankful for so many things. So, you know, the politics and the, like the election coming up, I guess, in about a year is just so much of like the media now. So I feel like I'm very grateful because all you hear about these days is like climate change. So I'm very grateful for like fresh air and parks and green. Mm. And it's like something that I feel like I think about now all the time. And it's a little bit of a bummer, but also right now I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful for what I'll say, the three C's. Okay. Climate change, our crew here, the podcasting. And I've been reading Jen Gunder's book called The Vagina Bible. And she really goes on and on about how great the clitoris is. So
I was wondering where that third C was coming.
I was like, the three C's, climate change, or the climate right now that we have, the clitoris, and our crew, our House of Pod crew here. I am very grateful. I think what we're doing is a lot of fun. I hope it's helping some people. You know, Joe, again, with the editing and the sounds and the commute and your time. Kaveh really does a lot of the homework and does these outlines for the questions. And we both spend a lot of time trying to get great guests. And I don't know, I think it's, and Nadim obviously behind the scenes as well. So that's what I'm grateful for today.
Great answer.
Yeah, it's a good answer. The climate thing is an interesting thing too. It really is. So I was just in Montreal, and by the way, Montreal is a dope city with a lot of, if we have any listeners in Montreal, let's talk. I want to talk about the food you guys have there. Fantastic. I don't believe your bagels are better than New York bagels, but lots of great food to be had there.
I think that's controversial, but
it's very controversial. I know I'm saying an unpopular opinion there, but I'm going to be very patriotic about our bagels here in this country.
Yeah.
But when we were there, they were having the climate change like march.
Yeah.
And there were thousands. I mean, it was a huge turnout of young people.
Yeah.
And they were out marching for climate change, and they had great signs, and they had great energy. And it made me like equally happy and hopeful and sad that it was even necessary.
All of it. Yeah, that's how I feel.
It was an emotional experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it was, I felt so much. And these kids were like so right to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
So right to be angry about what's happening to their future. Like, you know, the people like the Koch brothers who aren't going to live or haven't lived to the age where they're going to deal with the disastrous climate change issues. I'm sorry, we're getting a little political.
It's my fault because of my three C's.
But anyways, they aren't going to have to deal with it. These kids are out there marching with it and having a family now. I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's really important to me. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. All right, Kaveh, tell us.
Okay. First thing, speaking of family, I'm very grateful for them. That's it. That's the first and foremost thing. It's a life-changing experience having a family, and everything in your life changes sort of your drives, your goals. Everything changes in that regards, and I'm super grateful for that because I'm experiencing something that a love I never thought I would have. And the second thing I would say is I would agree with Lizzie, this group, how much work you guys put in, I'm super grateful for it. Joe does a lot of work on the editing. He puts together, you know, he makes things sound good. He makes sure that every episode sort of has a good sound and there's music to it and all that stuff. Lizzie does a ton of work behind the scenes on each episode, getting guests and that sort of thing. Nadim is also getting no accolades from this. He's not involved in, he doesn't get to meet any of the cool guests we do. He doesn't get like the same like people coming up to him and saying how cool, you know, it is that he's doing the show like we do. And he still does it. And I'm really grateful for that. And the last thing I would say is I'm really grateful for our listeners. And I know this is super pandering, but it's 100% true because I spent a lot of time online talking to our listeners or getting emails or messages from them. And it's amazing. It's amazing that, like, you know, in the time that we've had the show, the couple of years we've been doing this, we've built this small but really vibrant community of people who care about their health and care about the same stuff we care about and want to talk about and seem to appreciate what we do. It's really the energy that keeps us going is you guys. So I really, I honestly mean that. I want to say thank you to all our listeners and to everyone who follows us on whatever Facebook or Instagram and Twitter. So thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That was even better than Lizzie's.
Fuck yeah.
They're both good.
I totally lost all gratitude for you guys. I'm done. I'm over it.
All right. Stay tuned for our next guest. He is awesome. His name is Raif Darazi. He is a pretty popular YouTuber. If you haven't seen his YouTube channel, it's about living with HIV, advocacy for HIV patients, and bodybuilding. Follow us on Facebook and follow us at Instagram and Twitter at The House of Pod. If you have questions for us, email us at hopquestions at gmail.com and find us at, like I said, Instagram, Twitter at The House of Pod. Stay tuned. All right, with us today, we have Raif Darazi. He is an HIV advocate, he's a competitive bodybuilder, and he's a YouTuber. He has a great channel. And he talks about living with HIV, working out, the right mindset, and all that stuff. Raif, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've been watching your videos. Everyone will check them out. We'll post links. We really appreciate your honesty and your willingness to talk about your story. So why don't you start by telling our listeners when you were diagnosed and how that happened for you.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed back in 2012. I was diagnosed with HIV a week before my 27th birthday. And then ironically, my follow-up appointment was on my 27th birthday. And that's when I was informed that I actually had AIDS. So yeah, that was quite the wake up.
What was happening at that time? What symptoms were you having, if any?
Oof, a lot. I probably can't remember them all, but I know I had oral thrush. I had swollen lymph nodes. I had dyshidrotic eczema. I would just general fatigue, muscle soreness, dizzy spells. I had a sore in the back of my throat. Oh yeah, the oral thrush. That's all I can think of at the moment. But I had a lot, and I was getting sick all the time.
How long was this going on for?
I would say probably a year and a year and a half. And in retrospect, it's like, how did you have all these symptoms right for that long and you didn't do anything? But it was so circumstantial for me because I wasn't thinking it was an STI because I was in what I thought was a committed monogamous relationship. So I thought there was just something going on with my body and I had symptoms that were just popping up here and there. So I didn't connect them all.
Right.
So for our listeners, you say STI, which is sexually transmitted infection. And when we were med students and doctors for many, many years, we called them STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. But we've joked on the show before and will again many times that, you know, we're trying to be a little bit more politically correct with our terminology and try to understand the patient's perspective. So we'd rather call it an infection than a disease. It's a bit kinder. And before that, it was venereal disease, VD, like all of our parents probably called it VD.
I remember that too.
Yeah. So every 5 or 10 years, it changes. So you were diagnosed when you were, I think you just said or told us 26 or 27 years old. So how did that rock your world as like a young, healthy man who was just getting into bodybuilding?
Well, at the time, bodybuilding wasn't even on the radar.
Yeah.
I was just living my life kind of on autopilot a little bit. And when the doctor told me that, I completely lost it. I broke down. I was sobbing in tears. I assumed that I would be dead in like 3 years and that was going to be it. So that was my worst fear in life, was getting diagnosed with HIV. It happened. And I was like, okay, well, immediately my mind was like, okay, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Do I even continue going to school? Do I work? What do I do? Like, you know what I mean? I'm going to be dead, whatever. It's been a learning curve since then to realize that that's not at all my fate.
Right.
When you were diagnosed, were you had a partner at the time, is that correct?
Yeah.
And how did that, I'm assuming you had to go tell your partner at that time, how did that discussion go?
So I waited till he got home from work because we were living together. It was 3.5 years at that point, and let him know. And then, it was very somber, of course, and like craziness, but he was very supportive at the same time. He's like, "What? It's okay. Like, we're going to get through this together." And then he had to go get tested. And then he found out that he had AIDS as well.
Mm. So AIDS, you say AIDS as opposed to HIV.
Yeah.
How did they, is that what they diagnosed you with? They said you had AIDS at that time?
Mm-hmm. My CD4 count was 169 when I was diagnosed.
Okay, wow. And yeah. And were you at that point when you were first told, how much of an understanding did you have about HIV? It sounds like probably not much.
No, and it's ironic because when I was living in Orange County, I actually volunteered for a nonprofit that was specifically geared towards 18 to 24 year old males who were at risk for HIV. And it was all about HIV prevention. So you would have thought that I would have been well equipped to handle that and know what it is I was dealing with. And I just didn't have any information.
That's crazy. That's a pretty common thing, man. It's so outside of the realm of what you expect to have happen. I mean, you were in a monogamous committed relationship. My guess is you probably were checked in the past, you know. And I'm sure it came as a shock. I think it would to anyone in that situation.
How did you go from, and what was your course? Was it like family support, social support, medical support, self-education? How did you go from I'm gonna die to this is gonna be okay, right? Because that is the thing that you're saying, you felt like this panic and this sense of dread and this doom, this fear of death. And we know a lot now about, I mean, maybe you didn't know when you were diagnosed in 2012, but you know, if you read newspapers and stuff, you know a little bit more about it, but you get the diagnosis and it's not the same as what you know intellectually, right? The emotion and the brains are separate. Totally. So what happened for you that you were able to ground yourself and move forward?
The immediate people that I was in contact with, like the physician who diagnosed me and told me immediately was like, I was sobbing. So she's like, I'm going to leave the room for 10 minutes. Call someone that you love and you trust and let them know. So the first person I called was my mom, and I told her, and she, of course, that was ever since I came out as gay, that was her. She was just like, you're going to end up with AIDS and you're going to go to jail at some point and you're going to die. Those were like the key markers in her head. I don't know why.
Like one out of three, mom.
Yeah. So it was like her fear had been realized as well. And she was really upset at first. And of course, later on, she, you know, became better educated. But then it was also my doctor who ended up being the person who was taking care of me, my primary care physician. Like the way that she was trained, and I noticed this from our very first few appointments together, it was not just clinical. It was very like, sit down, okay, tell me about yourself. Like, what do you love to do? What are you doing in school? Mm-hmm. Who are your friends? Are you in a relationship? Like, she wanted to know all the details. And every time we met up, she would ask the follow-up questions. That's nice. So it was like amazing people like that. And then really well-developed linkage to care.
So along those lines, you know, a lot of our listeners are also medical professionals, so that clearly worked in their favor. But were there any things in this process of being diagnosed, of being treated, where you may not have necessarily criticism, but you might have some feedback for the medical profession as to what might have went wrong or what could have been done better in your case?
So there were people who were staffed. This was at LA County Hospital, and they have the Rand Schrader clinic, I guess, is just for HIV patients. One of the nurses was actually very ill-equipped to be handling people like me one-on-one. When I got there for my follow-up, and I hadn't found out that I had AIDS yet, it was on my birthday, I'm sitting in the doctor's office waiting for the doctor, and the door's open, and he walks by and sees me. And then he comes back in, stops at the doorway, and he says, he's like this big, like 6'3" guy with tattoos, piercings, like hunched over. And he goes, hey, you know why you're here, right? And I'm like, yeah, because I have HIV. And he's like, you got way more than that, bro. You got full blown AIDS. What? And then walks off.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, oh my God.
I'm trying to think about what his mindset was there. Like, what was the approach there? What was it like?
I felt judged, and I felt like this kid's an idiot. How come he didn't do this sooner? How come he let it advance this far? Like, what the fuck? Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm watching my mouth.
You can curse here. That's all right.
That's okay.
We
won't judge you.
It's a judgment-free zone, buddy.
Right. We do full-blown cursing here.
Yeah, so, full-blown cursing. So,
full-blown are the key words.
Yeah, exactly. That's so rude.
I don't want to make... any sort of, I don't want to help this guy's situation anyway. That was ridiculous what he said. But my guess is that he probably felt comfortable saying that because he knows that these days we have good treatments and we can control these things and we can help. But still, when you are just diagnosed, literally just diagnosed, that's not how you handle somebody. That's not how you deal with it.
Yeah.
And by and large, most people that I hear who get diagnosed don't know when they're diagnosed that it's chronic, manageable condition.
Right.
And then later on, when I was sitting with the doctor and she knew I sang, so she made me sing Happy Birthday, and so I'm like in tears singing Happy Birthday to myself, and she's in tears, and then he pops his head into the doorway, and he's like, oh my God. I didn't know it was your birthday. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Like that changes everything.
Really?
I'm so sorry. Okay. I was heckling you about your AIDS because if I'd known it was your birthday, I would have been much, much nicer about your AIDS.
Next time, check someone's birthday before you ring them.
Right. You know, it's funny because at the time you were probably freaked out about dying, like you said, but I'm looking at you now. I know how healthy you are and you're probably going to outlive all of us here in this interview and it kind of pisses me off.
Right. I have a question maybe for you, Raif, and maybe Kaveh. And maybe Joe, but do you think that talking about HIV and AIDS in this way, that's like it's a chronic, manageable disease, that maybe we're going to think more lightly of it, you know, and that in a way that could be dangerous and a little bit more carefree, and that's not how we should treat it, right?
I've heard the same argument made with PrEP. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you have to say, please.
No, it's not a, exactly. So I'd like to hear what you're saying. The argument for PrEP, which is prophylactic, preventative exposure treatment, right?
Yeah.
So Truvada is the one that we talk about where you take, if you're planning to maybe have unsafe sex and you just don't want to get HIV, which works amazingly well. We had Jonathan Volk on last year who helped do the research in this data.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hear that argument and I understand where people are coming from when they say that. But at the same time, I don't think that should be, I don't think that fear is the best motivator.
Yeah.
I think anything that comes from a place of love, support, and then education piled in all together, working as one big communal effort is going to be the best way to get people to treat themselves with respect and other people with respect. And so the whole, I mean, I get why in the 80s and the early 90s, it was fear tactics because it was like literally life and death. And it was this major epidemic.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't fear tactics. It was people were, you know, dying by the thousands. So it was like there was no threat there.
But.
No, but I hear what you're saying. I think it's to some degree, it's something that people in particular who have HIV should be able to claim it. And they should be able to joke about it. It's something that you kind of should own in a way. Do you find that you do that? Do you find that you're able to joke about it with people? Or is it still sort of strange?
Yeah, absolutely. I've recently, you know, started to accept that more. And I think a lot of times when there is a shift in the public perception of something that is considered to be like heavy or like off, like you like hands off, like you can't touch it. Once people start to joke about it, it kind of signifies a shift in the culture that like it's more acceptable and we can't have dialogue about it. It is uncomfortable, but like jokes help you break that barrier. Mm-hmm. And so like, for example, I part of my income is bartending in a restaurant. And so I started joking with my coworkers. At first it was like lighthearted jokes, like if people would tell me to be positive, I'd be like, I'm always positive. It's my blood. Like I can't help it. And then later on, it became a little more morbid. Like I would use it as a threat to people, like my coworkers, if they're pissing me off and we're like jabbing each other. But I'll be like, yeah, well, I put AIDS in your drink, so you already got it. Or if people are like, find out that I have free healthcare, I'm like, yeah, like you get free healthcare when you have HIV. So like, we should just have like an HIV party where I give it to everybody and we all get free healthcare.
Yeah.
It's like totally like, yeah.
That is such a quintessential American joke. Healthcare is so expensive. We should all get HIV AIDS,
just
you know, which by the way, not actually funny, but totally. I appreciate that when you can be light about something so difficult. So it's a great attitude.
It was nice to see like among my coworkers and friends, at first it's like shock, horror in their face when I talk, when I start making jokes like that, and they're like, oh my God, right, you cannot say things like that.
Yeah.
And then after a while they kind of accept it and they're like, okay, well, Rafe can say it cause he has HIV. And then after a while they start to like roast me about totally stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, that's what I want.
Yeah. Right. That's the best.
Yeah.
Amazing story, sir. You know, when did you start bodybuilding, and do you feel that you still kind of encounter any concerns from people with your diagnosis at this state, or is it still the same, or what could you say about that?
Let's see. It probably took me a year or two. I would say a year after my diagnosis, because shortly after I was diagnosed, I ended up breaking my ankle. I don't know if it was related to the ARVs that I was taking at the time, because it was called a tripla. Extreme, extreme side effects. And some of them was bone loss. So I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons why I broke my ankle. Mm. Anyway, as soon as I was back on my feet, I knew I wanted to reclaim not only my mental health and emotional, but also my physical health. So I started going to the gym regularly. I had never bench pressed, squatted, or deadlifted at that point. And those are like the holy trinity of bodybuilding exercises. So I really started to get into it. And then one day, one of the trainers there saw me and like pulled me aside and was like, hey, have you ever considered competing? I think you'd be perfect for it. And I was like, absolutely. So he took me under his wing, and then it's just taken off since there. And I'll be doing my first pro natural men's physique bodybuilding show in 2 weeks.
Wait, what does that mean? October 12th. Natural.
Natural meaning that no banned substances are allowed. They're like WADA tested.
But isn't that
anti-doping agency?
Wait,
I was like, what is WADA?
So if there is like this natural one, is there like a full-on steroids like competition? Because that would be dope. Like, would they just let everybody do whatever drug they want?
That would be amazing. Joe is definitely participating in next year's doped up steroid full-blown steroids.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Bodybuilding contest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Any federation that doesn't explicitly say they're natural, you can assume that it's steroids full.
This is fantastic information. Thank you so much for that.
So kind of along this the lines of how you started bodybuilding after the diagnosis, you've also discussed having like a victim mindset. You've talked about what a victim mindset means. Can you explain what that means to have a victim mindset and how you change that?
Yeah. So early on in childhood, you know, I actually went through quite a bit of traumatic situations with an abusive biological father that my mom and I ran away from. That's why we fled to the U.S. from the Netherlands. I was in hiding for most of my life using a fake name, and I just got picked on a lot here. And when I was growing up, and dealt with depression and all these things, and I was sick a lot too. Ironically, just, I think that was part of my psyche too. I just had a weak immune system, and I just kind of learned to think as though I'm a victim. And then over time, I realized that I could use that to my advantage in a lot of situations. For example, school. If there was an assignment due and I hadn't done it because I didn't do my homework or whatever, I knew I could say, hey, you know, I was really, really sick. Or I just wasn't feeling well. I had migraines as usual, or, you know, I'm just really going through it right now. And I could kind of leverage that to give myself all these exceptions that for a while were really cool. And it's like, hey, yeah, I'm like working it. And I wasn't doing it consciously. It was just became a part of who I am. And that was informing my life into adulthood and ended up becoming a crutch for me, because then I wasn't taking the lead responsibility for anything. And I was just at a whim to everything.
And how did that change? How did you change that?
So, yeah, after, it was basically when I broke my ankle and I was stuck in bed. I was still with my ex at the time, 3.5 years. I had found out that he was cheating and we were trying to make it work. And I had basically 5 months to sit in a bed and say, okay, ready? Like, you need to completely reevaluate your entire life. Because I really believe that everything is connected, and one thing leads to the next, and that I had brought myself to this situation that was not good. And so I needed to figure out what my part in that was. And that's when I realized my victim mentality. I was doing things like journaling, gratitude journal. I was reading every self-help book I could think of, motivation, self, like growth, and vision boards, dream boards, The Secret, you know, every kind of like woo-woo thing too. It was just like all of it. Like I wanted to change inside.
You got to love the dream boards. Yeah.
Of all that stuff you did, of all the things you probably, of all the different sort of teaching modalities, of all the different sort of philosophies, was there one that really stuck with you? Was there something like meditation, or was there yoga or something like that that really worked for you?
Or maybe the thing that you would tell like a younger you, like do this one thing, like what, you know, what you would tell the next generation. Yeah.
I would say the number one impactful thing that I've done for myself is gratitude. Gratitude has helped shape everything, the way I perceive the world and my life and my circumstances and valuing my body and my health. Gratitude is like the foundation for me, for sure.
So what did you do? Did you like start actively expressing gratitude towards people, or did you start like writing down? Because I've heard like, you know, we as doctors, there's lots of burnout, right? And one of the things that they teach you is like, don't worry about your load of work or how fast you have to work. Just be grateful, and it helps. And there's some evidence behind that like gratitude does improve like your situation and your mental state.
And similar to antidepressants, that's like works, the comparison.
It can work pretty well. Yeah. So what were you doing in that process to show gratitude?
In the very beginning, it was all about myself. So it was more just about me taking the time every morning, first thing in the morning, to write down 10, 15 things that I was grateful for, and doing this every single day and starting my day with that mindset. And yeah, I mean, like a lot of us kind of go through life and the voice inside our head says whatever it says, and it influences our emotions and our feelings and how we perceive things, and we don't give it a second thought. And I was realizing, okay, I can rewire that voice to actually think positively and to think from a place of gratitude, so that it's kind of reaffirming me and supporting me as I go throughout my day. And then my overall mood shifts and I feel better.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way you talk to yourself, that's really important.
Exactly. And now I'm very aware of that, and I hear myself thinking a lot, and I can correct it if I need to.
So, you know, we've learned so much about HIV in the medical world and also pop culture and life, you know. And when you think of like HIV success stories, honestly, the only person I can think of is Magic Johnson, like the only person who's there online talking about it. So is this your purpose, is to get online and get your story out? Because there's not a ton of people out there talking about this. And that's one question is this why you're doing it? And the second question is, did you look to any other success stories, specifically celebrities, politicians, anyone? Who was your person? Like, is there someone you looked up to?
So, yeah, I mean, it's funny that you say Magic, because that's exactly what my experience was. When I started talking about it with people, they're all like, oh yeah, and yeah, you're going to be great. Like Magic Johnson is doing, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, guys, but like Magic was 3 decades ago.
So
like,
long
where
ago.
Are all the millions of people in between, you know? And he's not the only, the high profile person with HIV, I guarantee it.
Right.
So that was my disappointment as far as looking for visibility in the media. And that definitely was the reason why I was like, okay, if there is nobody else out there doing this kind of like visibility advocacy work, especially someone my age, like my generation, talking about it and just kind of like being happy and healthy. And I'm like, cause I'm learning all this stuff. Like, oh, whoa, I can be completely healthy. Oh, whoa, when I'm undetectable, I'm untransmittable, all this stuff. And I'm like, how come nobody's talking about it? This is like huge information.
Right.
And so that's when I really started to think, okay, I'm willing to be that. If no one else is doing it, I'll step up to the plate happily and do that myself. And then your second question, no, I didn't model myself after anybody. I didn't
Not even Charlie
I didn't
Sheen?
See anybody. Not even Charlie Sheen.
Whoa. I forgot about him.
Yeah. Must we say his name?
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, just honestly, I mean, you would know better than we would. I can't think of anyone else. And yeah, Charlie Sheen's like, okay, not a role model. And that's a huge problem. So we thank you for coming on the show and doing what you're doing. Like, it's really important. What is it that this means for you, being happy and healthy? Is it one pill a day? Is that all that you're doing right now to be this happy, healthy, positive, literally and figuratively, person, right?
Yeah, it's one pill a day for me. I have zero side effects, noticeable side effects. All my labs are great. Every time I go to the doctor, I'm doing really well. I'm super healthy. I'm bodybuilding. I'm at the happiest I've ever been. I'm moving. My career is moving along. Like, everything is doing really, really, really well. So, yeah.
So you're recommending our listeners get HIV is what you're saying. That was the sort
exactly.
of
exactly. It's the answer to all your problems.
Gotcha. Okay. So listeners do not get HIV. Don't get any chronic disease, no matter how controllable it is. So, let me ask you, in terms of dating, because you're young, I assume. Single, you're out there on the scene doing the apps, the whatever apps there are to do. I'm mimicking hand gestures that look like I'm tweeting or something on with my hands right now.
You're dating yourself.
I'm
you sound
totally
so
dating.
Old.
I'm on the interwebs. You're on the interwebs doing things.
Are you on match.com?
Are you on the Actually, no, what's the other one?
No, that's the old person one.
No, what's the one that's even like more like serious than that? Like
the Christian one.
Mingle. The Christian Mingle or whatever. When you're out in the dating world, one, how is that? And if you're like doing that, the app scene, do you like put it out there on the app that you have HIV? When do you tell people that you have HIV? Tell us about that.
Is there an app for HIV positive dating?
Excuse me. I wouldn't say necessarily just for HIV dating, at least on an app.
Okay.
But there is on a lot of the gay apps.
Yeah.
They'll give you the option to put your status, positive, negative, undetectable.
Yeah.
I personally have chosen not to do that just because of how ADD, the whole app, Tinder, swiping culture is. People are just looking for the most minute reason to swipe past you and to decline and move on to the next.
Yeah.
And I think I have a better chance also of being able to educate someone and have that discussion if we're able to make a connection first. And then usually I'll wait till we meet face to face because then people can see how charming I am and like such good vibes.
Very charming.
Such a catch, you know. Yeah. And then usually when I bring it up then it's like, okay, there might be a little reticence. But it's like, I got you. I've got you trapped. Like, you're here with me in person. You can't just exit out of the app and stop talking to me or block me. And then in that moment, so often I use that as an opportunity to educate. Mm-hmm. And I would say 9 times out of 10, that person is then who was afraid and reticent at first, suddenly has a change of heart and is open and wants to pursue things further.
Do you still find yourself running across stigma of HIV though? Like people who are like, no, I don't want to go out to a drink with. I don't want to share a drink with you. I don't. Who knows what will happen? Do you find yourself still in this day and age encountering that?
Yeah, for sure. The last really big moment I had was I was seeing a barber in the valley here last year, and I'd been going there maybe like 5, 6, 7 times, and we would text each other back and forth. And call every once in a while, like we had a good rapport. And the last time I saw him, I could let him know about my HIV advocacy work. And he was like, wow, like, I can't believe that. That's intense. That's like so much. I don't know. I don't think I would ever be able to handle that if that happened to me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but so much respect for you and what you're doing. That's really great. And then radio silence after that day. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't respond to any of my texts. I would call, wouldn't call me back. They'd be like, oh yeah, he's in the shop, but he's with the client. And I'd say, okay, well, can you leave him a message? Let him know, call me back. Want to set up an appointment. Yeah. Wouldn't get back to me. It took me like maybe a month and a half before I kind of was like, okay, clearly he's avoiding me because of HIV.
Yeah.
And he won't even have the balls to say anything or get back to me. And I had to find a new barber.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And his loss.
Exactly.
I have a question that, and I recognize that on some level, it's not even a fair question. And I apologize in advance for asking it. But I've noticed in your videos that you are really good, really careful to point out, like you said, how grateful you are, how lucky you are, and you reference to how things were in the past. Do you feel some level of guilt almost that you were diagnosed at a time when things are so much better? Because Lizzie and I, we started medical training sort of at the end of what was the worst of it. So we saw just a little bit. We saw the tail ends. We saw like the last remaining like awful cases of AIDS, full-blown AIDS, where we didn't have much options. And thankfully, you know, now it's so much better. Do you find that you have like a little bit of guilt about that?
No, I don't.
Good.
Good. Yeah.
In a weird way, I wish that I was around and dealing with it earlier so that I could have been of more help to people in a situation like that.
Like an advocate. Yeah.
Do you ever talk to older generations of people who had worse stories or had more difficult stories? Do you talk to them about it?
I haven't, and that is something that I've put down in my notes for my vlog, is that that's what I need to do, is start reaching out to the older generation and get their stories and their experiences.
Yeah, it was just like that 50th anniversary of Stonewall in New York City where it was
I was there.
Oh, you were?
So cool.
That's very cool. Yeah. And it's, you know, it is important, and I think feeling grateful without survivor guilt, without guilt is really important, because, you know, not only did you get HIV or AIDS at a time that you are so lucky, but you're responding really well to the medicine, and you clearly have a very strong social structure around you. The people that we still see to this day who come to the hospital who are so sick are the people who have a lot of mental health disease and don't have the social support and structure. Those are the only people we see nowadays with, like, what you're talking about, thrush, which is a fungal infection of candida throughout, you know, their mouth and their esophagus. Kaveh and I see that more commonly than other manifestations of AIDS. But those are the only, it's a very unfortunate population who show up to the hospital in that distress.
And a big part of why you are so successful with this is because of what you've done. Because clearly, like you said, it sounds like your mom wasn't like super woke about it when you told her, you know?
Nope.
And you didn't have like a ton of support. You created it and you've done that on your own. You've sort of had the insight to look at yourself and be like, this is the kind of thing that I've been doing my life that's wrong, my whole life. You've worked to change that, which is really commendable. It's really hard. Your brain, this is a theory of mine, is that the brain will follow any pattern that it recognizes, no matter how fucked up or detrimental it is to you. Mm-hmm. In your case, it was sort of this victim mentality, and your brain was following this pattern that it recognized. It's so much more difficult for your brain to step out of that and do something different aside from that. Yeah. And you've done that. So that's really commendable. It's really impressive.
It's impressive for you, and it's impressive, again, your mission for the world, to try to be a face, a voice for, you know, younger people or older people who just, nobody talks about living with AIDS, and it's a shame, right? It should just be something that's much more common. And that's what we try to do on the show, is try to take away some of the taboo and the stigma of anal cancer and depression and AIDS. Yeah. And thank you for coming on and helping us with that.
And it is a lot better here in the US, but I mean, there are places around the world where it's still really, really, really scary. And the access to care is really scary. And because of the stigma, people are still dying of AIDS. So,
Yeah. Well, speaking of your face, and how handsome it is, where can people look at it? Did I make you blush?
Are you asking which dating app he uses?
No, I'm trying to get at YouTube. No, tell us about your YouTube channel, where people
can. Yeah, I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Raif Derazi.
Spelled
R-A-I-F. Yeah, D-E-R-R-A-Z-I. It's the exact same spelling for my Instagram. I have I do a lot of stuff on there as well. Those are my two main platforms.
Great.
That's fantastic, man. Hey, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun. If you find your way up here in San Francisco, where I hear there is a gay community, let us know. Come on, we'll have you on for a follow-up. How's that sound?
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I love that.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, man, take it easy.
Thank you guys so much. All right.
Welcome back to the House of Pod.
Let's start over.
Sorry.
Oh, that's my your phone mom. Just oh, right. Happy birthday.
That's my time. Mom's birthday. She just called.
Should
okay.
we call her?
This is how much I care about this interview is I just hung up
Screen
on my
him.
Mom.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns. All anecdotes and patient-related details have been changed with respect to date, sex, and certain details so that patient identification is not possible.